Welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show.
Moms, are you raising your kids to believe they can create the life of their dreams? Are you living your life that way as well? Living an awakened life means more than just talking about it. Join host Debbie Pokornik on Vibrant Powerful Moms as she shares practical tips, stories, and interviews with enlightened guests, all geared at helping you create and live an extraordinary life. It's time to stand firmly in your power and model the life you want for your kids to inherit. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Debbie Pokornik, and my mission is to help you create a life you love at work, at home, and at play. Recently, I began a new podcast series covering my book, Break Free of Parenting Pressures. Now, the content of this book really does stand alone, so you don't need to read the chapters in any particular order to understand it. But if you didn't listen to previous episodes and you prefer things to follow their more logical order, you are definitely welcome to head back to the beginning of June 2019 and start listening from there. Whatever you decide to do, I'm really optimistic that you will enjoy this reading. And you know what? If it's not your thing, I hope you'll return back in the fall when I'll likely switch back to my regular format of interviews and other timely material. But for today, we're going to continue with Break Free of Parenting Pressures, Embrace Your Natural Guidance, and we are in Chapter 2, Thinking Outside of the Box. Of all the things that cause us anxiety in our lifetime, the stress of fitting in socially and emotionally has to be one of the greatest. If we never worried how others perceive our thoughts or actions, life would be a lot easier. Unfortunately, most of us are unable to do this. For example, some of us feel stressed if a friend drops in and our house is a mess. Others will stress about how they look, what they wear, whether or not their language is politically correct, or how their child's behavior is going to reflect on them. It's the idea that others are judging us and finding us lacking that causes discomfort. When Eleanor Roosevelt said, "No one can make us feel inferior without our consent," she was hitting on a pretty big idea. We are bothered by others judging us when we believe what they say to be at least partially true. So if someone suggests that we are a bad parent for letting our 10-year-old go to the park alone, it will only bother us if we believe that it might be a little bit wrong. Their judgment makes no difference in our lives, except that it preys on our insecurities and results in bad feelings. In other words, we give their judgment meaning. It is interesting that we are seeing an increase in disorders that result in children having an impaired ability to pick up on social cues from other people. In other words, these children do not care what others think. They are wired to be unaffected by the judgments of others and are quite content to do their own thing regardless of how others view them. I'm not in any way trying to belittle the hardships these kids and their loved ones face, and I'm not suggesting this is all these disorders are about, but I am asking the question, what if their inability to care what others think is not the problem? What if that part of their makeup actually sets them up to accomplish more than our socially conscious thinking could ever allow us to do? I realize this kind of thinking is different from what we've been taught, but maybe this out-of-the-box thinking is worth exploring further. As a matter of belief, I do. The subconscious mind is interesting to learn about and can shed a lot of light on understanding why we do the things we do. For our purposes, it is very helpful to understand that our behaviors and feelings are largely a result of our current thoughts, which are strongly influenced by our beliefs. You could represent this by writing it out in a line where beliefs result in thoughts, which result in feelings, which result in behavior. In its simplest form, when our senses pick up on things happening around us, they send this information to our brain. This data travels through a filter system that starts with our beliefs. For example, if a bee lands on our arm and we believe that bees always sting, our thought might be, get it off, which results in panic surging through us, causing violent arm swinging and possible screaming. But what if instead our belief was that bees sting only if threatened? Then, when the bee lands on our arm, our thought might be, I'm no threat. We might feel calm or curious, and as a result, our behavior might be to shoo it calmly away. There are many other ways this could look, but the point is that our belief greatly influences what we think and feel and how we react as a result. Things don't always work in this linear fashion with beliefs determining the outcome, though. Sometimes we can change our thoughts about something and influence how we feel and behave. The consequence of this changed thought will either strengthen or weaken our original belief. So imagine that you are the panicked person that we just talked about. And let's say you go to an anxiety clinic to get over your fear. When the bee lands on you again, then you might have your new thought that you learned at the clinic come into your mind, which is, stay calm, you're okay, breathe. Your feeling might still be anxious because you still believe that bees always sting, but your behavior might be to freeze and do nothing. If the bee flies away without hurting you, it weakens your original belief and decreases the anxiety you'll feel the next time a bee lands on you. With practice and time, you might completely shift your belief to bees only sting if threatened. Now, on the other hand, if the bee stings you despite your non-threatening behavior, it's going to strengthen your old belief that bees always sting, and you might no longer trust the people at the anxiety clinic. The point is, our beliefs have an influence on almost everything we do. Unless we consciously decide to think a different thought or feel a different way, our beliefs will ensure that we get a lot of repeat behaviors in life. Many beliefs are inherited from our family of origin, and they sneak into our filter system without much thought at all. Others are formed as we repeat thoughts over and over in our mind, or when we witness something traumatic. Beliefs that are formed as a result of emotional trauma can be extremely strong, almost like they're burned into the mind. These beliefs can interfere with our daily lives because once recalled, they trigger the strong thoughts, feelings, and behaviors that were present when the belief was created. Sorting through our beliefs becomes an important task that should be done slowly in baby steps. Free parenting tip: everything we see, hear, touch, taste, think, feel, and do is influenced by our belief system. These filters allow us to function, but can also interfere with new information. It makes sense to be aware of our beliefs. I include in the book an exercise called What Do You Believe? I will put that up on my website at vibrantpowerfulmoms.com so you can pick up a copy of it there if you're really interested in it. In a nutshell, I'll just tell you that basically this is a task where you create a list of what your beliefs are, or you can look at a sample list that I provide and then write your own beliefs from that. And then you rate each belief and you pick out the ones that are really strong to you and you challenge them. You start asking, where does that belief come from? Why is it important to me? How am I enforcing it? What is it teaching? Does it fit with my values? If you have a partner helping you raise your children, then you might do your list separately and then compare and discuss them. And if you can't agree as to whose belief is the right one, take a look at who has rated it as very important. If someone's rated it as a 10 and someone else says, it's not really that important to me, it's just a 5, then you might defer to the one for whom it's very important. You just have to be careful because sometimes you get one person that thinks everything that they believe is really important and that none of yours are. And that can actually indicate another different problem that you need to deal with. So you can take a look at that on the website. And in the meantime, we will continue on to chapter 3. Chapter 3, this is your body speaking. My lesson in fear. When my kids were 2 and 4, we were outside enjoying the sun. I was working in a garden, and my kids were playing in the yard right behind me. Noticing that things had gone quiet, I took a glance, looking for my kids. I knew they could not have gone far in the moment since I'd last seen them. Scanning our small acreage with the pond in the back and fields on two sides, fear shot through me. Calling their names, I walked the few feet to an old shed beside where I had last seen them. The dog raised her head to look at me, but everything else was quiet. I jogged around the shed, continuing to call their names, and then turned and ran into the house. I ran upstairs, back to the main floor, downstairs, but all I heard was my own panting. By now, my heart was in my throat, and my memory was pulling out every story I'd ever heard about kids getting lost in cornfields, drowning in ponds, getting run over by gravel trucks, or carried off by coyotes. Now, I knew these scenarios were unlikely, but my rational thinking was gone. Running back outside, my eyes zeroed in on the dog lying beside the old shed. That was odd, because she was always with the kids. With tears in my eyes and a catch in my throat, I told the dog to find the kids. In response, I heard one tiny giggle. My fear evaporated into relief, then transformed into outrage. The kids came out from behind a board in the shed, giggling. I looked down at their smiling faces, a million thoughts of what to do crashing in my mind. The dog placed herself in between me and the kids as if sensing my surging emotions and momentary loss of control. Overwhelmed by my thoughts and emotions, I sat down and started to cry. The giggling stopped, and a little hand tried to push up my head. "Mommy, you okay? We fooled you, White." "Yes," I muttered in between sobs. "You fooled me." When I was able to talk, I told them how important they are to me and how scared I was that something bad had happened to them. We hugged, and they patted my back soothingly. From that day on, we only played hide-and-seek after announcing the game first. The F-word. It's time to discuss the F-word. Feelings. This is about our internal guidance system that protects us and prepares us for battle. It involves body cues or physiological changes in the body that are constantly checking in to find out how safe we are at any given moment. Many people talk about feelings as if they are a fluffy topic that we should pay attention to only when forced to by a therapist or hormonal woman. When we use this sort of approach, we are ignoring our natural guidance system and setting ourselves up for surprise reactions. Feelings are closely tied to two other F words, flight and fight, as they act like a security system for these responses by alerting us that something is wrong. In the past, our feelings were a major part of our survival system. If we came across a saber-toothed tiger, fear would shoot through us, accompanied by a thought like, "Get out of here, quick!" The brain, which has no access to the outside world, would acknowledge this information and ask our external sensors, eyes, ears, nose, or skin, to confirm the danger. If our senses confirmed it, blood and oxygen would immediately be diverted from our vital organs, including the thinking part of our brain, to activate the fight or flight response team, which is the primitive brain and our limbs. This would provide greater strength and speed to help us run away, climb a tree, or, if necessary, fight. Stated simply, when our body thinks we are in danger, blood is sent to the areas responsible for strength and speed. The brain and other vital organs are deprived of blood until the danger subsides. This is necessary for survival because even a really smart person isn't going to be much good once she's in the belly of a tiger. We are not at our smartest when this survival system kicks in, yet most of the situations we face today require more thought and less strength and speed. The decisions we make in the heat of the moment might seem fitting at the time, but once our thinking brain is back in charge, they rarely look as good. Our main job becomes recognizing our feelings, not just fear and anger, but all kinds of feelings: embarrassment, humiliation, disappointment, irritation, worry, passion, excitement, enthusiasm. When we recognize these feelings, there are plenty of body cues to clue us into them. It is our job to provide useful and relevant feedback to our brain so we can respond accordingly. The good news is that while it is our senses that provide the information, most feedback is given by our thoughts, and we control our thoughts. The bad news is we have learned so many negative responses and thinking patterns that we often get caught up in negative thought patterns and send back the wrong message. For example, let's pretend someone you want to impress is on her way over to your place for dinner. 10 minutes before she arrives, your child spills grape juice all over the beige carpet in the entranceway. It is the first thing your guest will see when she arrives. As you watch the purple stain grow on the carpet, shock, anger, and disappointment surge through you. "Am I in danger?" your brain asks. You look at your son, the stain, the clock, and unbidden thoughts come to mind. "Oh, I can't believe this. This is terrible. I told him this was an important evening for me. He's not even supposed to have juice in this room. Everything is ruined." The message the brain receives is, "Yes, I am in danger. Get ready." Blood is diverted, and you are no longer thinking at your best. On the other hand, if you learn to recognize your body tension, rapid breathing, and clenched fist, which are your body cues, you can short-circuit the negative loop with a thought like, "Everything is okay. There is no danger." Then you can take a deep breath, relax your tense muscles, and really think about what you need to do. The carpet might be ruined, but no amount of foot-stomping, yelling, or threatening is going to change that. Sometimes it is the body cues themselves that make us uncomfortable and cause us to fly off the handle. We feel the tension in our back, the butterflies in our stomach, and the slightly increased heart rate. What we don't notice is that these body cues are like questions checking to see if we need to get ready to protect ourselves. If we ignore this piece of the equation, lower-level feelings such as disappointment, nervousness, and frustration can result in a response that seems way out of proportion. Tuning into our body cues and recognizing what those feelings are all about allows us to use our guidance system properly. So let's reclaim this F-word and teach our children to be aware of this incredible message system. We can support it openly by learning about our physiological changes and celebrating the fact that we are aware. Feelings, feelings, rah, rah, rah. Free parenting tip: children are not saber-toothed tigers. When we understand the body cues that come with our feelings, we can avoid a primitive response to their actions. Tuning in to our signals. If we want to teach our children how to embrace their feelings and become more self-aware, we must start by tuning into our own. One of the simplest ways to teach self-awareness is to talk about our feelings and help our kids to talk about theirs. There are hundreds of words to describe different feelings we experience, each involving subtle differences in our body cues and eventual response. If you haven't used a lot of feeling words in the past, you might start by using a variety of new feeling words to describe what's going on for you. Tuning in also means learning which feelings, for example, embarrassment, disappointment, fear, worry, jealousy, make us more reactive. Feelings are only signals, yet sometimes they trigger a much stronger response. For example, many of us dislike being embarrassed and will quickly get angry when something embarrasses us. Many students admit that they blew up at their teacher after feeling embarrassed first. The teacher might not have been involved in the embarrassing moment, but it was that feeling that made the student lose his self-control. Understanding how and why we react to different feelings makes it easier to maintain self-control. For example, If we recognize the body cues for being embarrassed and learn to see the humor in a situation and even point it out to others, we can vent the emotion through laughter rather than yelling. It's worth it to figure out our sensitive areas and develop healthy ways to deal with them. Free parenting tip: being self-aware means knowing how different emotions feel in our body and taking the time to figure out what's causing them. When we do this, we make it easier to model self-control and respond in a suitable way. The feelings that arise from unmet expectations are a common cause of loss of control and a big part of tuning in to self-awareness. For example, imagine you come home to a sleeping household after a long, tough day. The kitchen, which was spotless when you left, is now a mess. You clean it up, grumbling about how unappreciative your family is and how you have to do everything. The next morning, your teenage son saunters into the kitchen, asking for lunch money and informing you he needs a ride to his friend's house after school today. You lose it. "What do you think I am, a bank? And who said you could go out after school? You hardly do anything around here, and then just expect me to drop everything so I can drive you everywhere?" Seeing the look on his face, you realize you've misstepped and quickly shift into damage control, but he's no longer talking or listening. What caused this eruption? This blaming stance came from the fact you were still holding on to unresolved feelings from the night before. In other words, the feelings that arose when you walked into the kitchen last night were still lurking and sent you flying off the handle with the slightest provocation. If you had considered what caused those feelings back when they originally arose, you might have realized your family had not met your expectations. This might have led you to plan a family meeting to discuss expectations and sharing of the workload. People cannot meet your expectations if they don't know what they are. Alternatively, your thinking might have helped you see that you were frustrated with your job for keeping you out late more than with your family. Identifying the cause of the feelings helps us keep things in perspective and deal with things calmly and assertively. Sometimes we'll expose unrealistic expectations or a communication breakdown, while at other times we'll unveil much bigger problems. For example, you might find out that your work hours or your relationship with your partner are the real problem and it's not your teenage son at all. In any case, these situations will be teaching our kids how to tune into their signals, helping them to be less reactive and more self-aware. So in the book, I provide some statements to teach self-awareness. But basically, these are statements that ask you to think about how you're feeling and why you're feeling that way, and then share those with your kids so that they can start to tune into their own feelings. An example would be, you know, if you find out that grandma has just canceled and won't be coming over as planned, you might say, "I'm really disappointed that grandma canceled. I was so excited that she was coming." Another example might be when you walk into a room and there's music playing and you might say, "That music is irritating to me and I'm finding it hard to concentrate." Another example might be, you're going somewhere and you're kind of nervous. You might say, "You know what? I feel really jittery. I guess I'm anxious for the games to begin." You can also use these kind of statements to teach your kids when it's your kids that are causing the problem. Like, "This bickering is exasperating to listen to. I can feel the tension in my shoulders." So basically, you're tuning in to what you're feeling, maybe why you're feeling it, and you're also, in this case, sharing the body cue that you're experiencing. The more you practice this kind of thing, the easier it will be for your own kids to come up with what is going on for them. So I will make a copy of this Statements to Teach Self-Awareness, and it too will be up on my blog at vibrantpowerfulmoms.com. And then finally, the chapter ends with an exercise, taking charge of your body. An important part of becoming self-aware is recognizing what's going on in our bodies and talking about that with our kids. Our body cues are unique for each of us, but there is often enough commonality to make a connection. For example, some people will feel tension in their jaw when they are angry, while others will notice it more in their shoulders. Tension is a common cue for anger. However, where it surfaces for each of us can be different. Work through the following exercises alone or with your children. So basically, this exercise asks you to think of three situations in which you've maybe overreacted emotionally and later regretted. And then think through those situations as to what was going on for you, what you were feeling, what kind of body cues you had. Often when you put yourself back in a situation like that, you will be able to recognize it. Oh yeah, I remember thinking that my shoulders were starting to hurt, or my teeth actually felt sore later. Or, you know, you were outside and you got a little sunburn lines right in the crease there because you were squinting, you know, that angry look so much. So that can help you to tune into what your cues are and make it easier for you to teach to other people. And while you're doing this exercise, I suggest you also create a list of some thoughts that you could use in future situations that can tell your brain you are not in danger and can help you calm down. These can be really simple things like take a deep breath. I doubt he did it on purpose. It's okay. Everything is going to be okay. So for the rest of the week, try to notice your emotions as they arise and, when possible, take a moment to reflect on the cues associated with it. Sometimes just recognizing the signals are there is enough to keep you thinking positive. That's it for today. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you've enjoyed this show, please share it with others to help spread the love. To find out more about Debbie, pick up free offers from the show, and listen to previous episodes, visit VibrantPowerfulMoms.com.